let the car have its way. Today I'm with Gerald Garcia at his home on Judson Avenue in Redlands, California. The interviewer is Robert Gonzalez. Mr. Garcia, could you tell me a little bit about your family background, when your family came here?
The actual year that they came, I really don't know. My dad was 21, huh? He was 67 now, so that would have been 40-odd years ago. And where he did come from was, originally he was born in Illinois, and his family was from Kansas City. And through a separation of his mother and father, he went to live with his father in Mexico, where his father was from. That was León, Guanajuato. And he stayed living out there for till he was about 17 years old. At which time he stayed in Kansas City for a few years and decided, well, he'd like to see what California was all about. He came to visit an aunt, and as he was here visiting, he, of course, you know, you need money to survive. And he took a job here, and as he was working, he met my mother, who was from Redlands, and here he stayed.
What are your parents' names?
Carmen and Frank Garcia.
Okay. So that was, he was 21, so that would have been, what, probably the 40s, late 40s?
40s.
Late 40s, okay. What did your father do when he first came here?
My father, when he came to work, he was picking oranges. Originally, he started picking oranges in the citrus groves. From there, he went into running a crew as a citrus foreman. And he did that until he retired just 2 years ago. He worked for all the packing houses here in Redlands. He picked all of the groves here in Redlands, along with us, as I have two older brothers and a sister. And my two older brothers picked, and I picked, and we know these groves in and out because, of course, we work for packing houses that don't even exist anymore. There's one here on Redlands Boulevard that was turned into an antique shop, and they have little shops there. That was Gold Banner, and I remember going there and loading boxes with the loaders. And at that time, they use what they use now are these they call bins, and you see them loading the forklifts. At that time, we used to use hauling trucks. They were just like 2-ton trucks, but the beds were narrowed down. They were all steel beds. And we would load small crates of oranges on those. At that time, I remember when I first started picking, I must have been about seven, eight years old. And I started picking the bottoms of the trees for my older brothers that were picking, of course, the tops. At that time, we were making 20 cents a box. I remember that. And he worked for Blue Goose. He also worked for Foothill. He worked for the East Highlands Packing House, and pretty much his whole life, he just worked in the citrus industry, just running a crew.
Tell me a bit about your mother's side of the family.
My mom, her maiden name is Araujo. Her family has been here for years. My father, Bernardino Araujo, was a construction laborer. I have an uncle that still to this day they have a club at the high school. He was killed in the Korean War, and that's Frank Araujo. And that was in honor of him. That was my mom's brother. And they basically just, again, they were working in the fields too, picking oranges and so on. But my uncle's kind of branched out and moved out of this area. And decided to work elsewhere, and then they moved out to Long Beach, Torrance, out that way, towards L.A. They didn't stay around here working the fills. And my mom she worked in the packing house, and she was a grader, so she did. She did the tallying, and matter of fact, it's Dole Packing House now. She retired 3 years ago from there.
So you started picking when you were 7, you said?
About 7 years old, started picking,
I imagine that would give some of your earliest memories, being around oranges and an orange tree, orange trees. But what are some other of your earliest memories of the Redlands area and citrus in the area?
Years ago in the citrus, we found it was more like being fun, huh, at that time. We playing in the groves, you know, you'd go out and, you know, now people are afraid to even go into the groves. But as kids, we used to, they were in our backyards. So they were all over. I mean, all of Herald Street, 6th Street, all that was groves. Now where we live here, through San Bernardino Avenue, all this was orange groves. Down Ligonia was all orange groves. I mean, you just went out your back door and there were groves. I mean, within walking distance, there were citrus groves. And as kids, we'd go in there and play, have orange fights, and just have a great old time. You know, go in there and play tag and chase after the rabbits and see if we could see any coyotes. Or there were times, too, that I remember that we could even go up and see the nest. There would be nest of owls in the citrus trees. And it was more of a big playground. Nowadays, the way times are, you don't let your children play in the orange groves.
How long did you work in the groves when you were a child?
Well, I was picking oranges. We would pick during the weekends. And that was on Saturdays, sometimes on Sundays, depending what the grove had ordered to ship, you know, to ship out. But we'd work every Saturday, and then we'd work all summer long. And that's what was kind of the thing that me and my wife talk about is that I remember when I was dating her that we were dating, and as a kid, you know, I mean, you always want to impress your girlfriend, you know. You don't want to let her know, well, I'm an orange picker, you know. So I remember when my dad, he would, at those days, they would furnish you with a bus, and it was usually an old school bus, and they would paint it a color, and they would put the company name on it, and they would go from house to house picking up the pickers. And, of course, because my father was a foreman, we were the first to get up and the first to be picked up because, of course, we rode along and the last to get home. But we'd ride in the bus and we'd go along the neighborhoods, and for the men that and the kids that would pick at that time, because in that day, you know, the father would pick, and along, if he had children, they picked too, along with him, of course, to make money for the family, to support them. And I remember still one time when I was going down the street and Mary was walking down her street, and we happened to go by and we were dropping off a family from picking. And I saw her and I ducked and I was hiding in the bus, but she saw me. She knew I was in there. But and she stood there looking in the, through the window up at the bus, and I wouldn't come up, you know. And I kept telling my brother, "Is she gone? Yes, she gone. No, she's still there. She's still there." And then finally my dad just drove away, and then I got up and turned around, you know. And then she says, "I saw you." I said, "Oh, that wasn't me. That wasn't me," you know.
What was an average day? Your day, you were just saying, was a little bit longer because of what your father did. But what was an average day in the groves like?
An average day, you mean time-wise, or what we did?
What you did.
And well, time. First of all, we'd leave in the morning. My mom, I can still remember us getting up. God, it was dark. I hated it. I can still remember it like yesterday. But we'd be laying in bed, and then I'd hear my dad wake up, and we'd open up our eyes, and at that time, we'd all slept in one room, my brothers, you know, there's three of us, and I remember opening my eyes and looking. It was dark. The sun wasn't even out yet. It was dark, and I could hear him and my mom talking, and my mom would be making lunch. And at that time, you know, the women would get up, the mothers would get up and cook early. They would make lunch. They would make your tacos and your tortillas, fresh made in the morning. I remember smelling in the morning, and we'd wait, and I just anticipating, oh, when's my dad going to walk through the door and say, "Okay, guys," you know, we just wait and wait. And finally he'd say, "Come on, let's get ready." So we'd get up, we'd get dressed, and it was, you know, picking oranges has got to be one of the worst jobs in the world. I mean, the smell of the trees, the dust, the dirt getting scratched, the heart, the sweat, it's just... picking, you know, carrying that sack around all day long. I mean, it disciplines you real quick to do something better in life, you know. But I think it's good. I think it's good for everybody to try it, you know, to do it a summer. But, I mean, I wouldn't even – I had my sons helping me a little bit here on the ranch, but I wouldn't even want them to go through. I just let them know this is what it's going to be like if you choose not to, you know, further your education. But anyway, to answer your question, we'd get up and – and my mom would be there, and we'd sit down and have a little something to eat. My dad would go outside and fill up the truck at that time, or the bus. And what they did, they put this water container inside, and you would fill it upside with water. He would fill it up with it from the garden hose. And that was for the men to drink all day long. And you'd go ahead, and we'd be there, and he'd be warming up the bus or the truck. And the truck was, it was, again, like a two-ton truck, and they would have a shell on the back of it. And that's what he would carry the men in the back in. But he had both at that time. But in the bus, and then we'd fill with water. And we'd be sitting around waiting, and he'd say, okay, let's go. And we'd get in, and first thing we'd do is get to the part of the bus where we could lay down and sleep while he was picking up the other men. So we'd go to the back of the bus and bundle up and just go through, and he'd go in. And it was so funny because you'd go up to a house and you just honk. And I remember there'd be one light on, still dark. Then the light would go off, and here would come the men with his sack, with his jug of water. Some of them maybe had a radio, if any, if that. And just ready to go to work, you know, and get in the bus, say good morning, and sit in his seat. And they each had their own seat where they'd sit. And then we'd go pick up the next one. And then finally, after the last one was picked up, we'd take a drive out to the grove. Once we'd get there, it was still too early, or the trees were still real wet. Because it seemed like at that time we had more dew in the morning, huh? Now it's not that way anymore. There was more dew, so the trees stayed wet. And you couldn't really pick, because if you picked during the time the trees were wet, you'd get, you know, you'd get wet, and then you'd come down with a cold, and you'd be miserable the rest of the day, so... we'd have to wait until the sun would come up and kind of dry them off a bit. So as soon as we got off, my dad would do, he'd get down. And they'd get, all the men would pitch in and go out and gather dried wood from the grove, breaking branches off the trees on it, build a big bonfire and just sit there and talk and laugh until the sun would come up, you know, and drinking coffee. And then before you know it, they'd go and get their ladders, walk into the grove, and the day would start. And you would... the way we would pick, my dad would start us on one end of the grove, and we had what you called sets. And it was a set of trees that belonged to you, and that was usually like three to the side, three back, you know. And then the next guy would take three to the side, three back. And they had their little tricks on doing things like that, too. I'll tell you about that. But we'd go in and we'd pick during the sets, and then what will happen towards the end of the day or when the boxes would run out, that would be the end of that, you know. The day was over when boxes would run out, or we could go ahead and pick until 3:30. And usually you would do is you would pick, but they didn't like you to leave a set uncompleted, so you would just try to finish it. And if it was close to 3:30 quitting time, you just stop the rest of the day. So that's why still to this day you'll go by and you'll see crews out there sitting down by the street, and you're wondering what those guys doing just sitting there waiting, you know. It's because they finished their set already. And it's too late to start a new one. So they'll wait until the other guy finishes their sets, and then they come out, and then they'll leave. And then we would do that. We'd pick. And then at lunchtime, huh, remember that, my dad again, about 11 o'clock, he'd go and gather dry wood again and build this huge bonfire. And then he'd let all the wood burn down. He'd have a lot of just coals. And then he would yell in the grove, I remember, lunchy, you know, it's lunchtime. He'd be yelling, and everybody would know it's lunchtime, so we'd all get together. And that, you know, as you can tell, that was my best time, you know, like, by looking at me. So some of the guys would drive to work, but those that didn't, we'd have sodas and that. But, you know, it was like, it was different in those days because it was more like a big family. Nobody was ever greedy with anything, you know. It was like we sat down together, and like if we were working side by side, and you had children, I had children, our kids were friends, you know. We got along, they got along. We'd sit down, and they'd be talking about whatever they were interested in, and we'd be talking whatever we were interested in at the time. And we would all sit down and sit around the fire, and they'd bring out the burritos and unwrap them and put them on the coals and warm them up like that, and then put them on a big piece of tin foil, or even some of those would even put them on a piece of wood. And you just have them there, and they would say, you know, here they are. Everybody would do the same, and if you wanted, you ate your own, but if you didn't, you'd share with somebody else and take. Everybody just got along, or somebody didn't have a soda, or somebody had extra sodas, you know, they're here. You know, it's all there. It was just like one big family, like I say. And I see a lot of that now is gone, you know, and I remember that. And it was weird because, like, even when we were picking and we weren't going to finish in time and say, we, you know, because everybody knew everybody, we're kind of like all friends, so we weren't going to finish and we were trying to hurry up. The other guys would come over and help us and fill our bins up for us so we could get done. Or if we needed some to make a box, what we would do is they would fill our bins and then we would split the money, or you help me and the next time I'll help you. And it was like a real, you know, like a real family. And a lot of that, you don't have that anymore. And I guess because we didn't have another, we didn't know another life at that time, you know. This is my son.
How you doing? Well, why do you think, or what do you think has caused the change in that, in that sort of attitude, that the camaraderie, I guess? Why has that changed?
I see the fact that it was, at that time, I think we were all poor. It was basically, we were all hard workers, but we were all the same. We were all poor. And it was like, hey, you know, we're in this, but we're in this together. So let's try to, you know, make it through the best way we possibly can. You have any problems there?
No. Okay. Pause just for a second. As you were saying, sorry, a little pause there. Now, you picked for about how many years till you knew?
Gosh, I'm going to say it would be about from like 7 years old till I was in high school, huh? Till about the 10th.
You went to pick a couple of times when the kids were born, remember?
Yeah, 10th grade, 11th grade, up till about 11th grade, 10th grade. So we got married when I was really young. Both of us were very young at that time, and I was still working in the fields at that time. But what had happened at that time, there had been a change. They brought in machinery. They brought in the big bins that you see now. They brought in the forklifts. And I was, at that time, I was in 10th grade, and my father trained me how to operate the forklift. So I wasn't a picker anymore. I was a forklift operator for him. And the guys would come in, and I mean, the change came too is when we had a lot of Mexicans out of Mexico that came in, and they started doing the picking. And as the generation just changed, because at that time, of course, you say you want something better for your children. So you don't, it's not be a picker, you know, go to school, get an education, and so you can succeed in a better life. And that's what happened. A lot of the people from here ended up moving away into other jobs, and that left it open for the Mexicans from Mexico. And I still remember as a child too, you know, 7, 8 years old, during that the Bracero program, do you remember that? Yeah. And the Periconi camp up here, my dad would go in, and that was one of the places we'd stop. We'd go in and we'd pick up a crew out of there and then come out. But of course, they burned it down now. It no longer exists.
It's gone for a while. So you were picking during the 60s, maybe early 70s.
Right? Yes. Uh-huh.
At what point, they don't do oil smudging anymore at all,
no.
Do they?
Okay. They do in some areas. Okay. They do, but it's gotten to the point where it's just too expensive. To run the oil smudging, but a lot of the larger groves still continue to do that. Up in Hemet, they do that a lot. In this area, there's less of it, but towards Ventura and Hemet, up Indio, they still smudge.
Did you ever smudge?
Yes, I did.
Smudging.
Yeah. Now, that's another story there.
tell me about
that. Well, what will end up happening is, first of all, you would pray that you wouldn't have to go smudge. And after that didn't work, then, you know, the phone call would come in and the temperature would be dropping. And they would call my dad, and I'd say that they're expected it to freeze, so we needed to get out there. So what we'd do, we'd take us out to a grove. Again, we were in a crew. And we parked the bus or the truck, whatever we had at that time. All the guys would get out, and they'd give us torches, and we would light smudges. And they would dig the smudge pots. As you can see, a lot of times they have them in the middle right here next to the tree. Mm-hmm. But during that time of winter, when it was expected to freeze, they moved the smudge pots in the middle of the furrows. And we would go through and we would light a section. A lot of times we would light the borders, because they felt by keeping the borders warm, the middle of the grove would be protected. There were those that believed every other row, just light that up, and then that way it would protect the middle row. And there were those that just believed light the whole everything, you know, let's go for it. So everybody had their own way of doing things. And they'd give us little torches. We'd light the end of it, have a diesel fuel in there. And we'd walk, and they have a little regulator on the side that you would regulate. They would tell you what they wanted it regulated at the time, 2.5 or notches or whatever. You open up the top, you drip the oil in, it would light, the smudge pot would light, you close the cap, and you move on to the next one. Then after you completed lighting the grove, what we would do is we would put about 5 or 6 smudge pots in a circle, light them all, and we'd all sleep in the middle of that on the ground and try to stay warm. It was cold. I mean, there was nothing to think about hugging a smudge pot, but of course, you know, that you'd burn, but it was really cold and we'd freeze.
It was pretty at night.
It was, because it was beautiful at night. You'd see the smudge pots all lit up, and all the charcoal, all the smudge would be on you. It'd be all dark, black, all over. Then the next day, for those that were game, we'd stick around. We'd sleep all night in the grove. The next morning we'd get up. They'd say, okay, it's safe now. Because my dad would go out and check the thermometers to make sure the temperature. And once it went up, then they'd say, okay, it's safe. We can. And it was usually when sunrise. Then we'd go through about 4 or 5 in the morning, go through and turn off the smudge pots. Then that was all you do with that, again, is just close the cap and it would suffocate the flame and kill it. So then what they would do is we'd go out on tractors with trailers with big tankers in the back, go up and down the furrows with little nozzles like a gasoline nozzle, and fill up the smudge pots all day long. After we got done doing that, then we could go home. We'd shower, eat, sleep a little bit, and pray they wouldn't call us that same night again to go out. It's a time that we had to go out about 5 nights in a row like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the money at that time was great for the amount of work that you did, but you paid by freezing. It was cold. It was really cold.
What did they pay you?
At that time, it was like $1.25 an hour. Huh? Mm. But then, you know, today you really think about that, that's nothing. But at that time, it was a lot, because they would pay you around the clock. So say if they called us out at 8 o'clock at night, we'd get paid from that time. It took us maybe 2 or 3 hours or an hour to light the smudge pots. We got paid while we were sleeping till the next day we turned them off. That'd take us about an hour and a half, and we'd fill smudge pots. So we would go from anywhere from 8 o'clock at night, all night long, all day long. That's 8 o'clock in the morning, all day long, and we'd get home maybe about 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's a lot of hours, and that adds up. You know, that did add up. It was a lot easier than picking oranges.
I know that during the 20s and 30s, I heard there was only a few reports of people getting seriously injured doing their smudging. And they started sending people in teams after that in the late 30s. What kind of, or were there any kinds of injuries that pickers and smudgers were prone to more often? Did that occur a whole lot?
I only saw one guy, and that was during the time, and that was because what he did is my father, a lot of times my father would tell them, you know, of course you have all the smudge on you, all the oil on you. And my father would tell the guys when they would get home to wash their clothes. You know, I know, again, like he says, You know, it was hard during that time to put them in a washer, but put them in a tub, soak them, wash them, put them out to dry. Have two pairs of clothes that you would wear for smudging, because after you go through a season of smudging, the clothes aren't good anymore. They're ruined. Well, the first night, they're ruined. And he would say, wash them, because there was a chance they'd be saturated just with so much fuel in them that they could just combust. You know, when you go in, it just would drip on you and the whole thing. And there was one guy that did, his leg did catch on fire, but we ran him down and we jumped on him and put him out. I was a distance from that, but I saw when it happened. It just went up the side of his body, and he was going to run because he got scared. He panicked. And luckily he had someone with him that knocked him down, and they just started throwing dirt on him and took care of that. He didn't get burned bad at all. But that was, a lot of that was because of just not following up on safety procedures.
He really got burned for most of his body when he slept too close to the smudge pot.
I can't remember who that.
The oil too.
Yeah, I can't remember who that was. I don't remember that happening too.
Yeah, that happened. Well, I think that's about the worst one we've heard. Mm-hmm. He slept too close to the smudge pot.
I saw one time where a guy was hauling fruit. His name was, I don't know his last name. I only knew him as Lupe. I was 10 years old at that time, and I was, what I would do is they had these forks that would come down, and they would, what they did when they hauled fruit, they would put the chains over the orange boxes, and they would put a wooden plank over the top, and the chain would grab onto that, and they had this hook that would come down and grab the chain, and you would crank down, and then you would, as you crank down with pressure, it would tighten the chain that would keep the boxes in place, and then you would wrap the chain on the handle. I saw one time when I was standing at a distance, this gentleman had pushed down on that device. As he pushed down, someone had called his name, and he turned, and when he turned, the arm kicked up and hit him in the jaw. When he hit him in the jaw, it knocked him back. He went up, he knocked him, I say, about 2 feet up in the air, fell back, he was unconscious. Called the ambulance, paramedics. Well, actually, there were no paramedics at that time. It was more of an ambulance that just came out and took him. But later, my dad had told me that they had broken his jaw, a few of his teeth, and I never seen his ever saw him again or heard of him again.
He'd had enough.
Yeah, that was enough. There was another time. The main thing, basically, about picking oranges, it was mostly like eye injuries. You would have eye injuries and that because of the branches and that. That was one thing. They never issued us goggles or any kind of eye protection. Of course, they should have that now, but I don't think they do. I think the most hazardous problem that I would see with picking oranges was when they would fall off the ladders. They got hurt. Their broken bones. I saw where we would use extensions. We would have these long ladders they were extensions. We'd add to them. This guy was at the very top. He had a full sack of fruit, and the branch broke and gave way, and he came this way. The ladder came up from under him, and he flew over the top, and as he was falling, he landed on his side. It's a rocket car. That they race out here at the airport. You sound like a war zone, huh?
Yeah, that's what they're doing out there. Yeah.
And he got injured. You know, he broke some ribs and that. I myself fell at one time, and I had a full load of fruit, and the ladder had shifted on me, and I fell back. And the citrus fell on top of me, the sack did. And I got the wind knocked out of me, but I was okay. Mm-hmm. And I was small then, too. It was only when I was about 11 or 12. I remember laying there for a while crying. My dad came and got me, picked me up, dusted me off. So, oh, you're okay. Get started again.
Was there a general age group that pickers fell into? And I know that, well, my dad picked until he was 67 years old. Was there some sort of, you know, I would imagine that it's younger men doing a lot of the work.
I think at that time they did pick. As years went on, they were older pickers. Nowadays it's not that way anymore. You really don't see older men picking anymore. What have taken over again are from people from Mexico. They're doing it now. And then again, they're here for so long, and then they go back to Mexico. It's a seasonal thing. Then they come back. During the time of my father and my grandfather, and of course like your father, it was more like we had put down roots, you know, And when there was no picking going on, there was always something else to do.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. And my next question is, what kind of things, we'll probably cut this short, go on to the side of the tape, but the next question is, what kind of work was there in this area? There were many people that picked at least some members of the family had to go out and go to different parts of the state, follow different crops. But there were other families that managed to stay here mm-hmm. year-round. They were able to find work. So my next question for you is, what kind of work did you and your family, were you able to do in this area?